So the next matter on the calendar is A22-0911, Anoka County, Anoka, Minnesota Respondent versus Law Enforcement Labor Services, Brooklyn Center, Minnesota Relator and Bureau of Mediation Services Respondent. And as you can see, you can choose between two podiums, either the one in the middle that goes up and down or the one closest to your table. You each will have 15 minutes for your principal arguments, and Relator will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. It's underneath, I think. Did you find it? There you go. And please state your name for the record at the beginning of your argument and who you represent. And with that, are you ready to proceed?
We are ready.
Thank you.
Good morning, and may it please the court. I'm Renee Zachman, attorney on behalf of Relator Law Enforcement Labor Services. And with me today is LELS attorney Scott Higby. The matter before the court arose when a group of sheriff's office employees earnestly approached LELS seeking to exercise their right to organize with peers that share common interests and concerns within the workplace. And they sought out representation from a labor union they understood was best able to represent their unique interests as sheriff's office employees. The question before the court today asks whether respondent Bureau of Mediation Services erred in determining that a bargaining unit of support staff within the Anoka County Sheriff's Office was not an appropriate unit for collective bargaining. LELS is seeking reversal of BMS order on the grounds that it's based upon errors of law, is arbitrary and capricious, and is unsupported by the evidence. But LELS argument today hopes to focus on the most critical errors showing two things. One, that BMS failed to apply the requisite statutory criteria correctly, and two, that it relied on factors not intended by the legislature and impermissibly elevated its own internal four-unit policy preference above the statutory criteria as the controlling factor in its decision.
And I know that that is one of your main arguments and that there isn't a lot of law on that, so I'm going to ask both of you this question. If we were to make this precedential, what would the syllabus point be?
Well, I think what is important here is that there are 8 statutory criteria that Minnesota Statute 179A.09 directs BMS to consider. And it doesn't offer any guidance on the extent to which a internal policy preference of the Bureau may be considered. Arguendo, that point may be considered under the 8th criteria, which is other relevant factors. But an other relevant factor may not be controlling in BMS decision, and it certainly may not be elevated above the other statutory criteria that the statute directs BMS to place particular importance upon. So these criteria are factor 5, the history, factor 6, the extent of organization, and factor 7, the recommendation of the parties with particular importance to be placed on the union's recommendation. And these all happen to be factors that support LELS's petition for a unit.
So what do you think of BMS's, it seems like one of their overarching principles, they don't want over-fragmentation. They think that's bad not only for the county or government entity, but also for the employees.
I think the over-fragmentation issue is a little bit of a red herring here. Over-fragmentation, again, is not one of the 8 statutory criteria. I think it's really useful to look at the history and legislative intent of PLRA. If we look back to 1975,
Counsel, if I could stop you there, though, I'd prefer you focus on the merits respectfully, because as you acknowledge, which I appreciate, the statutory factors, eight statutory factors, include number eight, any other relevant factors. So why isn't over-fragmentation a relevant factor? I think that's more what I, because it seems like it would be a relevant factor that you just don't want to have too many, bargaining units that are out there. It's much easier. There seems to be some efficiencies with having less units.
I respectfully disagree. I think in terms of over-fragmentation, there is no definition of, or there's no magic number, if you will, to tell us how many bargaining units within county government constitutes.
And with that, I agree with you, because I think, speaking just for myself, you know, the four unit seems somewhat archaic. But I think the concept is, let's not have, you know, rather than having 400, let's have four, or, you know, maybe 40, you know, some reasonable number. And that's kind of the way I read it. I don't read it as a hard number of trying to adhere to something that obviously doesn't apply anymore. But so I look at more as kind of the general concept of over-fragmentation, you know, having too many units. But why isn't that a laudable goal when, in fact, it was part of it historically?
Right, and I think I want to talk about the legislative intent a little bit and why over-fragmentation wasn't incorporated into the community of interest factors. I think the legislature is fairly instructive that to the extent this factor may be considered at all.
Well, but I want to steer you away from that, because if, you know, I understand the whole argument of legislative intent, but if legislative intent was there to not have it included, it would have said, these are the seven factors, and that's it. You cannot consider any other factors. But the legislature left the door open for other relevant factors. So I think my question is, why isn't this a relevant factor then?
It can be a relevant factor.
Okay.
And when it is, we would expect to see a significant testimony from the county, significant evidence considered by BMS to show that over-fragmentation would actually produce adverse consequences in Anoka County if this proposed bargaining unit were determined to be the appropriate unit. And in this case, there wasn't a single word of testimony from any county witness that the adoption of just one more bargaining unit within the county would result in over-fragmentation, would have an adverse consequence on the ability of the county to carry out its services, or would have adverse consequences on the ability of other bargaining units to function. And again, I think the idea of over-fragmentation is that the community of interest factors seek to identify groups of employees that share enough in common, that have enough of a commonality of interests that they're able to form a cohesive unit. And this cohesive unit will then support stable and effective collective bargaining relationships.
So, Council, here's my question. And the agency relies on, the county relies on, some of our cases rely on this Minnesota State College Board case, Supreme Court case from 1975, as the basis for why over-fragmentation can be considered as a separate factor. But when I read that decision, I'm just going to quote from that decision. The Supreme Court instructed that obviously the Act and its statutory coordinates attempt to eliminate the over-fragmentation that might result from the certification of individual bargaining units, citing to, I think, some NLRB case law. Why shouldn't we read the Supreme Court's precedent to say, not to say that the common interest factors that have been set forth in statute are already attempting to resolve the issue of over-fragmentation?
Well, that's exactly it. I think the eight statutory criteria already are designed to identify units that are appropriate. And the Minnesota State College Board case is incredibly important in that the court's holding in that case was extremely narrow. The court was interpreting a provision of the statute that in 1975 created an exception to the community of interest factors. A statutory exception. And that exception was for state employees appointed under the same authority. But we're not dealing with state employees in this case. We're dealing with county employees. And what's notable is that the legislature never sought to adopt that same sort of exception for county or municipal employees. The legislature has made efforts to define and conscribe bargaining unit composition within the act. And one example where we see that today is in section 179A.10 of the act. That section of the act does create exceptions to the community of interest factors, and it creates exceptions for certain types of state employees. And the legislature goes so far as to define 18 possible unit types for those state employees. And I want this court to compare those.
And I just have one other question about the State Colleges Board. Am I correct that it was that case that the agency relied on when it was creating its policy around having the four bargaining units? Am I recalling that correctly from the record?
You are.
Okay, thank
you. The Bureau's four-unit policy preference seems to have emerged following that case, and the BMS seems to have taken the court's holding in that case as some sort of directive for it to avoid overfragmentation in county governments. But that case contains no such directive. Again, that case analyzes a specific provision of PELRA that existed in 1975, related to state employees, not county employees.
And I have one other question related to the policy. Was that a formally promulgated rule, or is it simply an unpromulgated policy within the agency?
It is an unpromulgated policy within the agency. It is entirely of the agency's own making.
Thank you, Counsel.
Why do you think there's such an important distinction between state employees and county employees?
I don't know that I can identify the difference, but I know that the legislature identified a difference and that the legislature created rules very specific to unit composition for state employees, but that they've declined to do so for county and municipal governments. And by doing so, they've left intact these broad community of interest factors. And they've left intact the three factors within that community of interest analysis that BMS is directed to place particular importance upon. I do want to talk, circling back to the four-unit preference, and really what the effect of this four-unit preference is. The four-unit preference acts as a rebuttable presumption. It presumes that a countywide wall-to-wall unit will always be appropriate absent a compelling reason. And the problem is that a rebuttable presumption like this one, it has the effect of elevating itself above the other criteria and effectively nullifying those other statutory criteria, including the three that BMS is directed to place most weight upon, which happen to be three factors that support LELS's petition for a unit. And the Minnesota Court of Appeals has adopted such a view that a other relevant factor, to the extent it may be considered, is not to control over and above the other statutory criteria. They recognized this in the School Service Employees Local Number 28 versus Independent School District Number 270. That's a Minnesota appellate court case from 1993. And the court held that specific provisions of statute should control over the general. And this holding was specifically in the context of the application of the community of interest factors.
Counsel, you talk about the four-unit being a rebuttable presumption, but in you brief that as well. But did the Bureau, did BMS apply it as a rebuttable presumption in its analysis?
Absolutely. LALS's position is that the Bureau...
Where did it do that? Because, when I read through, I thought BMS went through all the statutory factors and analyzed them. I didn't see it starting out saying, okay, before we get to the statutory factors, we're going to apply this rebuttable presumption.
I think it's important in this case because BMS does make the broad assertion that it properly considered all of the 8 statutory criteria. And I would ask this court to look not at what BMS said it did, but how it actually analyzed the evidence in this matter, the evidence it actually considered within the body of its order.
You mean do as I say, not as I do, or... I mean, I'm struggling with that a little bit because, I think we have to go by what the analysis that they have provided. And I don't see anywhere in there any reference to a rebuttable presumption for, the four-unit rebuttable presumption. I think, isn't that really encapsulated in Factor 8?
I would note that I am out of time, but again, I would ask the court to the rebuttable.
You can answer his question.
Yes, the rebuttable presumption is our characterization of BMS's treatment of the four-unit policy preference. We are looking at the effect that the application of the four-unit policy preference had on the other criteria, and the effect that it has is that it operates much like a rebuttable presumption.
Thank you. You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Counsel for respondent.
Good morning. My name is Scott Lepak. I'm the attorney representing respondent Anoka County in the above entitled matter. May it please the court, thank you for the homework prior to my oral argument in putting together a syllabus point for this case, and I think it's actually a perfect entree into this. My syllabus point for this case is that the Bureau acts within its discretion in applying its 40-year policy preference applicable to county government when it applies its statutory requirements to consider overfragmentation, uniform comprehensive position classification, and occupational classifications. I tried to get it to be a shorter syllabus point, but that's hard to do on the fly.
Put it in plain English.
Yes. In the grand scheme of things, labor law is an area in which there needs to be collective action. Individuals don't act in labor law. Individuals represent themselves. Labor law is groups of employees coming together to exercise their collective might and their collective voices to act as one, to form into a group to advance the betterment in mandatory subjects of bargaining, wages, and grievance procedures. That's the basis of labor law, and that's why it is important when we look at labor law. This is all based on what is an appropriate unit. That group doesn't speak with one voice. It's not very effective. It's not a valuable bargaining unit for the employees, the union, or the employer where that unit is too small. It doesn't have enough of a voice. It may not represent collective interests. It may represent individual interests if it's too small. If it's too big, there's simply too many voices and too many different interests. Throughout the course of the public sector labor law in Minnesota, and it's based somewhat on the federal National Labor Relations Act, there's differences. We tend to use the National Labor Relations Act when it suits our interests, but we recognize that it is different in the public sector. In this instance, You have to create an appropriate unit. It doesn't need to be the most perfect, best bargaining unit ever from everybody's perspective, but it needs to be an appropriate unit. It cannot be an inappropriate unit.
So, Council, that leads directly to my first question that I have, and I apologize, a lot of these were sort of phrased for the agency, but the agency's not here, so I'm going to direct them to you. One of the arguments that appellant makes is that the agency departed from the procedure that it's used since the 1980s of first analyzing whether they had proposed an appropriate bargaining unit, blinders on to the unit that was being proposed by your client, and then after deciding that was inappropriate, then looking to whether or not the unit that the county had had proposed was appropriate. Now, I guess my first question is, first the agency argued, and I think you also argued in your brief, that they didn't do an apples-to-apples comparison, that they separately, that the agency separately analyzed the two. However, when I read through the analysis, particularly if I look at the analysis in Factor 2, where the agency says that the skills, crafts, and occupational classifications of the employees proposed for inclusion into the bargaining unit are wide-ranging and diverse, the employees that the county is proposing make up a bargaining unit that are also wide-ranging and diverse. That seems to me to be an apples-to-apples comparison. And there are other circumstances also where it seems like the agency was doing a similar thing with other factors. I guess I'm just using that one as an example. Do you disagree that that is a departure from how the agency normally conducts that analysis?
I guess I would. In my reading and application of these over how the Bureau has done it over the last number of decades, the Bureau does a significant number of unit determinations that involve bargaining units and employers other than county government. And when it does bargaining unit determinations that involve cities, for example, it doesn't apply this four-unit preference. So there are cases that talk about, bargaining units being proposed where the four-unit county preference, policy preference does not apply.
Well, I mean outside of the four-unit county preference. I'm talking about just the policy around an appropriate unit versus the appropriate unit, is I think the way that it gets described. And whether the agency had departed from what it normally does here by comparing the two rather than just analyzing the proposed unit of the appellant.
Yep. That is an excellent question. And in the cases that talk about and distinguish an appropriate unit, you look at the union's proposed bargaining unit first to determine if it's appropriate or not. That all goes back to, are we looking for the best, Regal, or is the Bureau looking for the best bargaining unit? No. It's looking for an appropriate unit. And when the Bureau looks at whether there is an appropriate unit being proposed by the union, it can't view that in narrow isolation where it says, okay, there's these eight statutory factors. There's really many more because we can consider any other ones we like, but and we can't worry about overfragment. We have to make sure there's not overfragmentation. But there's nothing to compare the union's proposed group to. And by way of illustration, if the union, in this instance, has got, I think they're proposing 34 employees and 16 classifications. There's six of those classifications in which there's employees not only in the union's proposed bargaining unit, but they're in other areas of the county government sections as well. If it's a narrow, only focused on the union's proposed bargaining unit, the Bureau cannot apply its first statutory required factor of considering uniform, comprehensive.
Well, you can have facts in the record that you would analyze that wouldn't go directly to comparing the option that the county was presenting.
Right.
Correct? I mean, I guess I'm just trying to get, this does seem to be somewhat of a departure in terms of the apples-to-apples comparison, not as you say that the district court needs to certainly look at the evidence that's been presented by both parties in order to analyze the factors.
Right. And I in the approach that the Bureau took, and I think the Bureau's brief was
And recognizing it's not your order also.
No, but I the Bureau's brief, basically, I think correctly identifies it as, you know, the Bureau's got to look at a bunch of evidence. The Bureau's got to apply a bunch of factors. How it does that is within the Bureau's discretion. If you say, okay, we're going to put these things side by side, that's how it is laid out in the discussion, but it's not how it's laid out in the order. The order says, Bureau has determined this is not an appropriate unit, and then it moves on to stipulated question two, what is the appropriate bargaining unit? And the Bureau decides the appropriate unit only because the parties asked it to. It was one of the stipulated issues. So as part of that analysis in reaching both questions one and two, the side-by-side comparison makes a lot of sense and identifies where the Bureau lands when it actually makes its decision in its order.
So here's, I certainly the agency has some discretion, and this is my last question about this. If this is a change in procedure, there's a lot of case law in administrative law that says an agency can depart from its prior procedures, but it can only do so if it explains its reason for departing from that procedure. Is there a reason why that general principle of administrative law would not apply to this case?
The Bureau's analysis of looking at side-by-side or considering the union's position first and on its own is certainly not in its rules anywhere. It's simply been...
I mean, we certainly have case law that has said that that is the agency's policy, and we have said that that was an appropriate policy since the 1980s, I think.
The cases, as I reviewed them, said that that was not an inappropriate application of the Bureau's discretion. And those were in the context, again, of there was a considerable amount of litigation and just general battling over whether there should be a determination of the appropriate unit or an appropriate unit. And in that context, the issue of the side-by-side analysis was, I think, criticized, analyzed in the context of if you're doing side-by-side, are you really determining an appropriate unit or are you really looking for the appropriate unit? And in that context, where you're looking at it for a different purpose than rather what we've got here, stipulated issues, is this an appropriate unit proposed by the union? No.
Well, I don't see an analysis separately of whether this was an appropriate unit without looking, without there being a direct apples-to-apples comparison with the county. I think that that's, I certainly understand the argument that in the order section, the district court made the finding that this was not an appropriate unit, but I don't know where the analysis is that they analyzed that this was not an appropriate unit separate and apart from the unit that the county was proposing.
And that is an excellent question. If the order outlines, and this is where we go back to our first minute argument, is the four-unit policy preference and the Bureau's general distaste for individualized department bargaining units as being overly fragmented. So the Bureau...
What is the case law in terms of the weight that we give a policy as opposed to a promulgated rule by the agency? Because if this... Certainly we would give a promulgated rule by the agency the weight of law. I don't know that the law is the same in terms of an unpromulgated policy by an administrative agency.
Yep, that is accurate. This is not a promulgated rule. This is a 40-year policy. As you look in the sort of the labor law precedent, the Bureau, I think, in particular, courts have said, where the Bureau has done something for 40 years and there hasn't been any legislative change, that is an area where the Bureau is entitled to have significant discretion as an exercise of their expertise.
But it wouldn't be weighted as legal authority the way you would weight a promulgated rule by the agency that had gone through rulemaking where the public had an opportunity to comment, et cetera.
That is correct. This is not a hard and fast rule that applies in every instance. This is a policy preference where we take a look at a county proposed bargaining unit, and the Bureau says, okay, let's start out by noting that we cannot have over-fragmentation. The Minnesota Supreme Court has told us that in 1975, and we've taken that to heart.
Well, they said the statute takes into account over-fragmentation, certainly in 1975.
And from that, the Bureau then says, in counties, we've got four basic groups. That doesn't mean the argument, the analysis, the evidence ends at that point. The Bureau says, we note that as our initial determination. There's still statutory factors the union is entitled to, does, and significantly argues, briefs, presents evidence to say that four-unit policy preference, that general distaste for individualized department bargaining units, can be overcome. And the Bureau has overcome that issue. They overcame it in Anoka County. If you look at the record indicates the office investigators in the medical examiner's office, the county took the exact same position and said, this four-unit policy preference should be where you land. And the Bureau said, no, we'll start with this four-unit policy preference, but we'll apply the statutory factors. And in that case, the statutory factors say that should be its own bargaining unit. The same thing happened in the Anoka County organization efforts with the court administration staff. Again, the county took the same position. It said it's the Bureau's policy preference. And the Bureau said,
I'm sorry to interrupt, but you only have about a minute left. And there's a question I did want to ask, and this goes to the factors. And not all factors are treated the same. There are two factors that the Bureau has to look at and give particular weight for, and that's the history and extent of the organization and the desires of the petitioner and employee representatives. The Bureau did find on the first one that it weighed in favor of LELS, but it found the second one neutral. First question is, why isn't that second finding an error? Because it's the Bureau seemed to weigh do kind of the apple, side by side comparison to that. And second, normally when we see if there's a factor that must be given significant consideration, we'll see language of saying, this one strongly favors, but it only says it favors, and another one's neutral. That seems inconsistent with what the statute requires.
That is an excellent point. In this instance, the Bureau has got statutory factors that are outlined in 179A09, so the statutory factors. It includes other. And the Bureau recognizes that the other factor means it can bring in what it views as, with its expertise, relevant and important to consider. Over-fragmentation gets to be a key one from the Minnesota Supreme Court case. When the Bureau looks at these factors, it is notable in the statute that the statute indicates the factors, but it doesn't give any specific measurement. If this is a...
Well, I think it does. It says particular importance.
As to those two. And when you say particular, does that mean those two override every other factor? It doesn't say that. It says pay special attention, consider, because the Bureau is to consider.
I don't think it's... Yeah. No, I see. I respectfully disagree, because I think importance is the key word here. It's not... particularly consider this, make sure you don't overlook this one. It says these two factors are given particular importance.
And that is correct. They are given particular importance. In history, and obviously it's not before the appellate court because the county prevailed on this, but the history has been the group that the county proposed, the Bureau found the best, had been previously recognized. So if you apply precedent, history supports the county's position. But here, the Bureau said the history of the organization is simply not well-defined enough to... What can we apply particular importance to? We don't have an existing bargaining unit that was in place for a long time. We've got a speculative bargaining unit that we don't have a lot of history on whether that's been successful or not. When there's particular importance to be placed on that factor, as you don't even need to do a very deep dive on it, to just say that really doesn't help one way or the other. And then you're left with particular importance of the union that seeks to represent the bargaining unit. And again, while that's entitled to particular importance, that simply can't be the only factor that is given weight. So I hope I answered your question. I see my time is up too. So,
thank you very much. You. Sackman, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
I want to take this opportunity to address the an appropriate unit standard, and I would ask the court to take a look at the City of Bloomington versus AFSCME Council 5. There, the court does discuss the difference between an appropriate unit and the appropriate unit. But importantly, the takeaway from that case is that any unit considered by BMS must withstand the scrutiny of the an appropriate unit framework. In other words, the union's proposed unit has to withstand the an appropriate unit framework, and so too does the county's proposed unit in and of itself. And when we apply the an appropriate unit framework using the 8 community of interest factors to the county's wall-to-wall unit on its own, we see that the factors do not support a community of interest within the wall-to-wall unit. In fact, we see that only 1 of 8 factors supports a community of interest in the wall-to-wall unit. And this is how we know the BMS did, in fact, weigh the two units against one another rather than applying the an appropriate unit standard to each unit on its own. This can be seen at its analysis of factor 4. Its analysis of factor 4 looks at geographic location. And in that analysis, it correctly notes that employees within LALS's proposed unit would work at 2 different work locations. But nonetheless, it determines that that factor supports the county's unit. Even though the county's wall-to-wall unit would have work locations dispersed across the county at far more work sites, anywhere between 9 to 16 or greater work sites, it determines that the factor 4 geographic location is in favor of the county. And this is where we see this logical pitfall, a sort of false dichotomy that if a factor doesn't support the union's petition for a unit, well, then it must support the county's petition for a unit. And we see the Bureau kind of run up or experience that pitfall in its logic throughout the order. But the City of Bloomington case does affirm that the correct analysis, regardless of which unit description you're looking at, both of those units must withstand scrutiny in order to be the appropriate unit that stands for certification election. I would note that BMS's own organizational mission emphasizes that its role in applying the community of interest factors is to maximize the rights of public employees to organize in groups that share common interests, that have enough common interests necessary for cohesive bargaining. And the Minnesota Supreme Court has also recognized that the state has an interest in safeguarding the constitutional rights of association and the statutory guarantees of collective bargaining. And this is further codified in PELRA, which recognizes the right of employees to organize and choose freely their representatives. If the court does not reverse BMS order, the result will be obvious. The support staff of the Anoka County Sheriff's Office will be deprived of an opportunity to exercise these rights. How do we know this? Well, because BMS has already correctly identified in a prior order that it issued only 16 months prior to this order that it found persuasive the fact that an appropriate unit consisting of the entire clerical and technical employee class was once certified and the parties never reached a collective bargaining unit. And BMS stated, we take this as strong evidence that a broad bargaining unit will not lead to stable and constructive relations. The Sheriff's Office Support Staff Group, they have demonstrated the evidence does plainly show overwhelmingly that there is support for organization of that group and that the employees share a unique community of interest characterized by their occupational tie to the Sheriff's Office mission. For these reasons, we respectfully ask that you find the group of Anoka County Sheriff's Office support staff to be an appropriate unit and that you reverse BMS order. Thank you.
Thank you. The case was well briefed and well argued, and we will have our decision out within the statutory time frame.